Well, a massive escalation in this war in response to the United States launching missiles against a bridge in Tehran, which has now been destroyed. Iran firing back at Amazon, Oracle in Dubai, and Tel Aviv neighborhoods also hit. In fact, confirmed, not AI videos, by the way. In fact, live on Fox News, as it were. We're going to talk about that today on the show.
That's right. So last night, the president gave us a little pep talk. We're almost done. We're winning. It's okay. Just a little bit longer. Let me know if you're feeling like that's a-okay. We're also going to talk about Pam Bondi being out as attorney general. How much did the Epstein files have a role in this? Was that really her? Is there... Okay, we're going to talk. We saw that coming.
And we have some reporting, which we'll share in just a few minutes here, on who could be replacing her. We have interim AG Todd Blanche, but who is going to be the long-term AG? We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later.
Also, Dr. Robert Malone is out at the Trump administration. He resigned voluntarily. We're going to figure out what the hell is happening with the MAHA movement that endeared so many people to switch to voting for Donald Trump. That doesn't seem like it's a priority any longer, but it is still to us. So we're going to talk to him. We're excited to see if he will spill tea behind the scenes.
Colonel Daniel Davis is going to be joining us here in moments on this latest escalation and the fallout from President Trump's speech. Oil prices skyrocketing. I thought they were supposed to go down after the speech, but they're skyrocketing as we speak. So we'll get to the colonel here in a moment. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Rumble Wallet, because you know how many people have been debanked lately, especially if you have certain political views that don't align with some of the big banksters out there. That's why Rumble built Rumble Wallet. It's a self-custodial wallet that lives inside of an ecosystem that actually defends free speech and financial freedom. No bank holding your balance, not even Rumble, can touch your funds. You have, it's fantastic. This is your money on your keys, on the blockchain, on your time. Rumble Wallet connects your money to a marketplace of ideas that refuses to cave into censorship. So if you're serious about sovereignty, financial and digital, this is where you level up. Go to wallet.rumble.com or search for Rumble Wallet in your app store. Download it, back up your recovery phrase, and move your money where it belongs in your hands. Rumble Wallet is a technology provider only, not a custodial service. See terms at wallet.rumble.com. All right, so let's get to this latest escalation in this war. Maybe you thought, heading into the Easter weekend, that things would be calming down after the president's speech, but that is not the case. After the president's speech, the United States struck a massive bridge inside of Tehran. And by the way, this bridge was part of a new documentary as really the pride of Tehran, because it was going to cut down commute times for the people that live there, shave about an hour off of commute times for the Iranians who go to work in that city. Trump posting this: the biggest bridge in Iran comes tumbling down, never to be used again. Much more to follow. It's time for Iran to make a deal before it's too late. There's nothing left of what could still become a great country. President Donald Trump.
The cruelty of it really gets me. At least President Biden had the manners to pretend he didn't blow up the Nord Stream pipeline.
Right. At least he lied. Like, he had the courtesy of lying to us
about
Biden
it.
Biden lied about blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, which has descended Europe into an energy chaos and crisis. But okay. So Trump is gloating about it on Truth Social, posting videos about a bridge come tumbling down again so the Iranians can't go to work. And what sort of strategic target is this? Is this a war crime, striking civilian targets? Imagine if the Golden Gate Bridge in California were suddenly struck. I mean, that's what people are comparing it to today. Would we label that a war crime? Most assuredly. But, yeah, I guess war crimes, who cares anymore, right? I guess that's the way we're going with things. But meanwhile, Iran has struck back. So here is a strike at the center of Tel Aviv just a short time ago, as confirmed on Fox News. Watch as this ballistic missile strikes into the heart of that city. Feeling the impact there as that camera is then jarred apart. Entire neighborhood on fire, as again featured on Fox News. So not AI, but also being shared across social media as well. And you can see rescue crews attempting to get there and put out this fire in this neighborhood where this ballistic missile has struck. We're also learning today that an Amazon data center was struck in Bahrain. Oracle was struck in the UAE. And that's exactly what Iran said they were going to do, which is strike Microsoft, Google, Amazon, all of these large American corporations. And that's exactly what they're doing. And by the way, the United States is not protecting them at all, because well, we can't. And that is one of the big revelations out of all of this. So we got more to talk about. I want to talk about the president's speech, but of course, these latest developments are worth bringing in Colonel Daniel Davis, host of the Deep Dive with Dan Davis, to get his latest assessment on all of these latest moves over the last hour or so. Colonel, great to see you as always.
Always great to be here, Clayton. Thanks for having me back.
So we watched your show this morning, and then, of course, your assessment of what the president was saying yesterday, and, of course, a lot of lies and inconsistencies. But now we see this latest escalation, and it seems like all of that has been, like, thrown out the window. Like, what we heard last night in the president's speech seems to just be tossed out. So I guess any sort of ceasefire agreements, talk of peace, maybe all of that has been scuttled. Anyway, what's your assessment of this latest escalation this past hour or two?
Well, listen, I think it's just a continuation of really what he said last night, because he was talking about bomb you back into the Stone Age where you belong. I mean, that was kind of alarming to me on the surface of it, because he was clearly talking about punishing the civilian population, the entire population, not just going after the IRGC or some of the political leaders or so. But I mean, literally just putting in the crosshairs the entire Iranian population, which can only have the effect that we're seeing, which is it's going to solidify across the political spectrum everybody in Iran together against the United States and Israel. I mean, if anybody thought that, well, if you just hit them enough and cause enough pain and hardship to the civilian population, then they'll start putting pressure on their political government or whatever. I don't know what the logic was, what they think. It's never worked out that way. And in fact, it virtually always works out, as we're seeing here. And so then now here today with this bridge situation, especially given that he literally bragged on it and posted it on his social media on Truth Social, it seems like that he's making good on that. And he said it on that Truth Social right there, that, you know, this, you know, he's using this whole all caps thing, make a deal before it's too late and all that. And listen, I mean, this is as close to a cut and dried war crime as you can get, because the only time you can hit civilian infrastructure, whether that's a bridge, whether that's electricity, power generation, is if it has a direct correlation to a military target. And at least from what I can gather so far, that is, I think your analogy to the Golden Gate Bridge is probably the best. It's just a civilian a population there, and that has no military utility at all. Certainly has, definitely has no military utility to anything we're trying to get done, because we're trying to just coerce the country through the destruction of its infrastructure to comply with what we want to do. It's not like, well, they need that bridge in order to get to a position here that we're trying to isolate them from, and that armored division goes across it, you know, something like that. That could potentially be a legitimate military target, not this. And this just seems so pernicious, and it seems more like, I'm going to do this because I can, and what are you going to do about it? But it's going to work contradictory to anything President Trump wants. It will just make all of the people in the region, certainly in Iran, say, listen, the only path we have is to continue to resist and not give up no matter what, because nothing is off targets and nothing is off limits. So I think that this is, especially if things go south here, you know, he may be brought up, President Trump may be brought up on war crimes charges himself or so. And you may think, well, it doesn't matter what anybody internationally does. We'll just ignore that anyway. True enough, that's probably how it's going to work out. But that's not to say that if there comes a Democratic-led House of Representatives that may say, hey, you represent our country here, and you could be impeached on something that is most assuredly a high crime and misdemeanor, and this may have a lot more relevance than even some of the stuff of the past, some of which was definitely politically motivated. But this one would have some substance to it, so it won't be something easily dismissed. Wow. I just worry about what's going to happen to our reputation, quite aside from that, too, because this is tarring all of us around the world. As people say, the Americans are now just this gangster-type country that's doing all these things to other people, that just obliterating the rule of law, obliterating their own constitution, and now obliterating morality, what they used to want to be under the Reagan administration, a city on a hill, a model to be mimicked and standards to be trying to live up to. And now then we're saying it's all about power. You do what I want or I kill you. And that is reprehensible to me, and it's deeply wounding to, I know, a lot of people in the United States.
But is it effective? Have we ever seen that work? So it seems to be this torture philosophy that if I hurt you and your people enough, you will bend the knee. And I'm searching my brain for when militarily that has ever worked. the Mongols? Like, what are we dealing with?
It didn't happen when we bombed, the Nazis bombed Britain and hoped that it would break the resolve of the British people.
But is there any other way to see it? Is that we are just going to inflict as much suffering on your civilian population until it hurts you, and it will eventually hurt, even though we don't see evidence of this, that they will rise up against you because we're hurting them so badly. That seems to be the philosophy, right?
I mean, I think, Natalie, I think you got it right on this spot on. I mean, whether you're talking about like a torture situation against an individual or a collective punishment against a population, I mean, the Nazis tried it in World War II. We tried it in World War II against the Germans, against the Japanese. We tried it against the North Korean population during that war. It never worked. The Nazis tried it against the British at the Battle of Britain in trying to bring London to its knees. It never worked. It didn't work against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. It didn't work against Hezbollah in Lebanon. It didn't work against Iran in the Iran-Iraq War. I mean, anywhere you want to look at it, regionally, recently, older, you know, back and further in history, it's never succeeded. I guess it just has this allure because it's frankly almost a little like war porn, if I can use that term, because it's like people lusting to use power that inflicts pain on somebody who's powerless. I think that some people get off on that. I mean, it sounds horrible to even say out loud, but I mean, the evidence I think is pretty strong that that's something that needs to be considered.
And one of the whole justifications for going over in the first place was that, oh, Iran killed 30,000 of their people. It's like, well, let's kill more to make it, you know, better.
Yeah, we're liberating the people of Iran by bombing their infrastructure.
Yeah, it was always a fraud to say that from the beginning. And, of course, that's why we went from the 3,000 people that the Iranian government itself acknowledges were killed in all these protests. Then it went up to 10,000, then 30,000. And then last night, Trump jacked it up to 45,000. So it's just a number, and it's not even real. But it doesn't matter. They don't care if it's real or not. And obviously, you know, President Trump saying back in January, you know, you protesters, it just hurts me to see all these people being killed by this terrible regime, this theocratic Nazi-type regime. We're going to come in to help you. Help is on the way. Just keep going. And then now that he's like saying, yeah, we're just going to kill everybody, and we don't care. And if you still don't do it, then we're going to take all of your energy systems offline. We're going to destroy your oil infrastructure, everything that literally could put and water at desalinization plants, which Trump also specified, which also is a war crime. He's literally putting the entire population at risk, and is now making good on some of those threats. So,
can I just say two things that give me some cold comfort here? Is one, the letter to the American people from the Iranian leaders yesterday shows that they know that this is not the will of actual civilians. We don't want to be doing this by and large. And the fact that these civilian populations will not be broken because there is still a human spirit underneath it that does not submit to evil. We see that people in Gaza are still alive, are still kicking. So anyway, I just wanted to share bit from what you had to say.
So Colonel, I want to ask you on I'm confused because last night President Trump told us that they've been decimated. This is all wrapping up. And then this afternoon we see this rather large escalation, and Iran saying they're firing back and hitting, again, multiple targets throughout the Gulf countries that we are not protecting and helping. And at the heart of it, so we're hitting Amazon, Oracle, data centers, American company targets throughout the Middle East. The Strait of Hormuz is closed, and no ships are going through there. We're seeing oil prices spiking and skyrocketing at this point after the president's speech. So I'm just confused when we say that they've been decimated, their ability really to fight back has been incredibly incapacitated. How are we able to see ballistic missiles striking at the heart of Tel Aviv this afternoon or this evening and all of these American companies being destroyed?
Yeah, I mean, this is just more of that just disconnected from reality claim that President Trump is saying what he wants to be true, even though it's grossly contradicted by the physical evidence. And it's been from the beginning. And, you know, I mean, he's been saying since right at the beginning. You remember, I want to say it was on the fifth or sixth day of the war. He said, oh, we've all but won. It's basically over. And he's repeated that in different versions several times after that. And you keep seeing scenes like what you're seeing on the screen right now. And even though we are given a tremendous pounding to the Iranian side, and Israel is too, they are definitely getting hit and hit hard. And there's lots of stuff that's been destroyed. Lots of people have been killed. But that doesn't get into the system system that Iran set up, where they have foreseen this in the decades past, where they had these significant underground facilities and missile cities and the ability to have missiles fire from under the ground, so you don't even have to have a visible silo, much less a mobile launcher, even though they still have a lot of those left. There's lots of firepower that they have left, and it was discussed openly many times before, and yet President Trump just keeps saying what he wants to be true. But it just isn't, and they're going to continue to do. They kind of shrug their shoulders and say, well, we can absorb this for a long time. We've done it for 8 years during the Iran-Iraq war when you were supporting our then-enemy Iraq, and we can do it again if we need to, and we can spread this out over a long time. And they have the resources stored up in a protected location, and they almost certainly can make good on this, no matter how many times President Trump says something to the contrary. Now, I'll tell you, there's one thing I want to bring up here, though. Didn't get a lot of notice last week, and it's something that I'm worried about when we start talking about this war, because there's clearly no military solution to it. You cannot force open the Strait of Hormuz, and you can say it's somebody else's job or get mad at NATO for not sending in their Navy. They're not stupid. They're not going to send their Navy to go to the bottom of the Persian Gulf. They would be fools to do that, and they aren't fools. But that means that the strait is going to stay closed, and President Trump can't just walk away from this one. So then you have to worry, if he tries to escalate, can he even do that? Because there's, the ground troops, there's only like 20,000 that are either there or on the way there, which is a pinprick on a map. I mean, you can't even hardly see it. It's not going to do anything. But last week, Laura Loomer put out this X post that says, I just have a sense that there's a big 9/11 type attack coming that would be 10 times worse than the actual 9/11. And I bet that a lot of these podcasters will be exposed that they have been actually helping some of these people. I don't know. I just have a feeling. And I thought, that's weirdly specific. And I worry about somebody maybe thinking about doing some sort of a false flag kind of a situation here in a big way, and then they would immediately blame it on Iran, and then the people like Tucker, people like Megyn Kelly, maybe even your show, something like that, where like you're given the truth about the situation, they say, oh, he was given aid and comfort or something like that.
Right.
It's like they already have the villains marked. And so if anything happens, I'm really worried about it if it does, but I don't think we can dismiss that just out of hand.
No, I think an absolute, we've been saying on for weeks that we think a false flag is going to be used. I mean, just talk to former CIA agent Michael Scheuer on our show, who says that that's his big concern, that they would use some sort of a deranged Muslim as a false flag planting operation inside the United States in order to sow this type of discord. So I think you're spot on about it. And then, is Israel involved in it directly? We had on the other day, Joe Kent was on our show last week. And one of the things he said specifically is that every time we start to negotiate or have some sort of a move towards an off-ramp, the Israelis come in and bomb the people we're negotiating with. We need to constrain the Israelis. And I know he said that this morning on your show, we can't make any progress unless we constrain the Israelis. And then, of course, we just learned that J.D. Vance was basically going to be setting up this meeting with through Pakistan with the Iranian foreign minister, Kamal Karazi, who was seriously wounded as a result of these strikes.
And his wife killed.
And his wife was killed. So literally, J.D. Vance is going to be meeting with this guy, and then suddenly his wife is killed and he is injured. They tried to kill him, of course. I think we could point directly at the Israelis. President Trump was asked about this, like about these negotiations, and here's what he had to say about Trump taking credit for this. You can roll that one.
He's working on the deal, right? How's that moving? Is it okay? The big deal? You see it happening? So if it doesn't happen, I'm blaming J.D. Vance. If it does happen, I'm taking full credit.
Or you could blame the Israelis for trying to kill the negotiating team on that. Colonel, we'll get you out of here on this. We know you're up against a hard break. What do you make of that?
Listen, I'm just kind of sick and tired of the, I'm just going to be blunt about it. The White House letting another country call all the shots here. I mean, this isn't the first time that somebody has been assassinated that we went after. President Trump admitted in the opening rounds that there were some other people that we wanted to reach out to, at least in their theory, was that they would take out the Ayatollah, and then they would have some other people that might be amenable to our position. And they were amazingly killed in the process. And it certainly wasn't by our side. And then the Israeli side keeps undermining everything that that we're trying to get to an end. And at some point, doesn't the president of the United States have to say to Israel, shut the hell up, get back in your box or something to that effect, because if they're harming our national interests and undermining any attempt to get out of this already unwinnable war, and I'll just tell you that, there's no military solution here, not to get the strait open, not to defeat Iran, etc. We have handed them, because President Trump listened to the Israeli side, we have handed them this opportunity now to hold a chokehold over 20% of the world's petrocarbons. And there's no way we can force it out of them. And now that the only way they're going to do it is if we give into some pretty significant concessions to them, which I can't see the pride of President Trump ever willing to do. But the alternative is that then we just keep fighting and they keep holding on to the control of that. And that price of oil will keep going up and the cost of everything will keep going up. And then you have the literal possibility of either recession or, God forbid, a depression if it goes down that path. All because we're not telling Israel to just get in your lane. He should tell him, listen, do you want to go and do something with Iran? I think it's a dumb idea, but have at it. You're going to do it, and you're going to do it without us. You're going to do it without our weapons, but you can do what you want. I'm going to do what is best for our country and is not continue down a militarily unattainable path that will harm our country long term. It has already, and some things, the cost of a lot of this won't come out until later, but I think we've already baked in some real long-term costs, both with our allies in the region, our allies in Asia, and our allies in Europe. I think this is going to be a very costly affair.
Well, Dan Davis, one of our favorite analysts, basically I'm going to you every day to make sense of what are the truth and what are the lies and what do we know. So very thank happy. You for your expertise. Yeah, it's great to have you on Redacted.
Thanks, Colonel. Great to see you. Right. All right.
He's killing it. His numbers are really good. Give him a like, give him a follow on YouTube, because it's great for us to at least, you know, our government can do what they're going to do. It seems like they're going to, but we don't have to swallow it. So we can know this, and that's all we can do at this point.
And turning to alternative media to actually get some answers instead of these people who are bought and paid for on like the mainstream media networks, of course. So great to have Colonel on the show. All right, coming up, we're going to have another great guest on the show. Steve Friend is going to be here, FBI whistleblower. Someone who's been incredibly critical, of course, of Pam Bondi, who, by the way, was just fired. And according to reports inside the White House, Pam Bondi was basically, there was a sort of a shouting match going back and forth, and she was basically pleading and begging to keep her job. She is out of the job now. She's temporarily replaced by Todd Blanche. But who is the long-term person that's going to be taking over for that role? We're going to talk about that in just moments with Steve Friend. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Upward, because if you want to find a life partner, you want to get on a dating app that has that in mind, not something that is just going to boost your emotions, have quick communications and nothing lasting, or you find someone you like and then you realize, oh, they don't have long-term commitment in mind. Well, you can start with Upward, where people do, in fact. It is a values-aligned dating app for Christians. You know, modern dating can feel so draining because it's not designed to actually outsource itself. It's designed to keep you there, keep you looking, keep you frustrated. Casual connections, endless scrolling. So if you're looking for someone who's faith-based, has integrity and long-term partnership in mind, and that matters to you, then go ahead and download Upward today. It's available on the App Store and the Google Play Store. I really appreciate that it's a dating app centered around faith and real connections. I love that for other people, for anyone. You know, you never want to see someone with a broken heart based on sincere commitment and sincere intentions. So if you have sincere intentions, look for other people who do too. Download Upward today. Again, if you're ready to date with intentions instead of confusion, download Upward. Start from a place of shared values.
All right. Well, someone in the chat room just said, I can see it soon. The Dan Bongino Pam Bondi show could be coming to a podcast network near you.
I can't wait to miss that one. I want it to exist just so I can intentionally not listen.
Oh, maybe Dan Bongino with his numbers that have been plummeting. Maybe that could like resurrect him for a few days and bring it back up again. So Pam Bondi, yes, the Attorney General of the United States has been fired, has been kicked out of that job. According to the Daily Mail, there was a sort of shouting and a lot of begging going on. Mr. President, please, please, please do not kick me out the door. Do not take my job away from me. But that ship has sailed. She is now out of a job. Todd Blanche, of course, the same guy who moved Ghislaine Maxwell to a minimum security prison, who also said, "Nah, we're done with these Epstein files. Stop looking. We're not looking anymore. And we didn't really find any problems." That Todd Blanche is going to be taking over temporarily. But we're also learning here at Redacted, and we can report, that there is a real discussion right now that Ken Paxton of Texas, the Attorney General of Texas, is also being courted by the White House to abandon his Senate bid against John Cornyn of Texas and to come work in the White House in a replacement for Haste. Don't run against John Cornyn. Come to the White House instead as Attorney General. Will he take that job? What will that look like? Oh, too early to tell, but we want to bring that news to you. Now we want to bring in Steve Friend, FBI whistleblower, a true American patriot who was trying to right the ship at the FBI, and he was unceremoniously exited as well. I don't think there was a lot of crying and begging going on, much the same way that Pam Bondi was today inside the White House. Steve, welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Oh, thank you very much for having me today.
So just your initial assessment here. I can see the Dow Jones not doing so well. So if it had been above 50,000, maybe Pam Bondi wouldn't be out of a job. What do you think?
Probably. I mean, she knows the 50,000 points as dollars, but I think that her background, bringing that subject matter expertise to the Department of Justice, is just, it was too much of a gap to bridge there. Look, she went forward. She tried to do everything she could to do, as I like to call it, the MAGA land acknowledgement, where you come out before you say anything else, you express fealty to the president right now, and then you hope that that is going to pad over any sort of the ills or any sort of the mistakes or bumps in the road that you've had. And she just didn't do a really good job of communicating that. So I think the death knell for her finally was when she testified just so poorly in front of both houses of Congress during those hearings there. But this has been a long time in coming. I mean, her failures are legion. It really started almost immediately with the Bindergate scenario, and ultimately led to us having to see legislation pushed on through by Thomas Massie and Ro Khan that forced the hand of the Department of Justice. And even then, they resisted and resisted and resisted, and finally ended with malicious compliance, for lack of a better term. I mean, they just dumped millions of pages of documents without any rhyme or reason, any particular order attached to it, so that the American people would just throw their hands up and say, look, I can't either cull through it. Or if they did dig in there and find something, they could easily say, well, that's conspiratorial. That's something that was brought in by a crazy person. You can't take anything that we're saying here seriously. So not going to shed too many tears for Pam Bondi. I'm sure she will move on to some very luxurious and well-paying retirement gig, probably at a lobbyist firm in Florida.
But how much of it do you think was her? I mean, her Justice Department refused to prosecute evidence of crimes in the Epstein files. They're saying, we're going to rape her, we're going to eat her, there's a new 9-year-old. There was plenty there. There is plenty there to prosecute. Doesn't seem like Todd Blanche is about to do it. Do you think it really was her saying, this is fine, or is there other forces in there that prevented her? I'm just wondering, like, is it really her that didn't want to prosecute these people?
Well, I think anytime you're dealing with a figurehead of an agency, be it the Department of Justice, which is an entire department, or any of the sub-cabinet agencies like my ex-girlfriend over at the FBI, the entrenched bureaucrats who work there and have spent their entire career there, they're really proficient at one particular thing, and that is bubble wrapping new people that come in. They come and they go, Hobbs, they come and they go, but the swamp is here forever. But I will say this. I remember very specifically that when we had the Bindergate incident happen and she had egg all over her face, Pam Bondi went on one of her many appearances on Fox News, and she said something to the effect of, well, I had a mole come forward to me and say that those files are actually in the Southern District of New York, the crown jewel, the Department of Justice. And I remember thinking at the time, a mole? You mean one of your employees?
Right.
So now you have admitted that you don't actually have true control of your agency, and we didn't see any of the fumigation that was necessary in order to bring this weaponized agency to heel.
What could she have done, do you think, from day one that would have made Steve Friend a fan of Pam Bondi?
Well, there was a lot of things, but particularly to Epstein. I mean, that was one of the big giant promises of the Trump campaign coming in. A lot of people were excited to just see the list. I think that could have brought about, in a very judicious fashion, a very logical way, Pam Bondi, as the head of the Department of Justice, could have assigned a group of prosecutors, career prosecutors, a group of career federal agents, FBI agents from all different backgrounds, counterintelligence, crimes against children, violent crime, whatever was necessary, and isolate them, sequester them somewhere outside of Washington, D.C., and give them an assignment. We need you to cull through all of these case files and turn over what you can in a linear fashion so that it is a digestible way. And do it periodically. It could have been every month. It more likely could have been every 90 days because they have case files in the Department of Justice and the FBI that all the agents are familiar with that process. And if you had done that, you could have had a really long runway and you could have explained why you did or didn't take particular action, had you exhausted all the options. And I think the American people would have given a lot of grace and been very patient with that as long as there was regular intervals of production of the material that the people were promised by those who they elected. And she didn't do that. She just kind of ran the clock out as long as possible, filibusters, whatever she had to. And then ultimately, when there was a law on the books and there was threats to hold her in contempt, which would have been interesting because she would have been prosecuting herself, but she just approved a giant pallet document dump, which, from what I can understand, isn't even a majority of the documents that are actually in the files.
Right, which is a violation of what the DOJ, the Transparency Act, under Congressman Massey and Ro Khanna, as Natalie was talking about. And still, as Massey has said, we're not going to stop until people are in handcuffs, until we see perp walks, and there's been none of that.
Exactly, and look, the... I'm reflecting back to the State of the Union that we saw a couple weeks ago, and President Trump gave a very good speech at that time. But I will say this. I view a State of the Union sort of as a pep rally, right? That's right. Getting the fans out there and getting amped up. But if you don't perform on the field the next day, then the diehard fans are sitting on their hands. The casual fans are changing the channel. They're not even going to watch the game. And what does that actually mean? That relates to, we need to see tangible results. So from my experience, my background, being in the Department of Justice and the FBI, we needed to see actual action on not just Epstein, but the government gangsters that Cash Patel likes to talk about. There needed to be people actually in handcuffs for what they did, even if they're currently in the government, even if they're currently members of the present administration. That needed to happen. And instead, we've just gotten nothing. We've just, the results are, we're opening an investigation. Well, anytime they announce an investigation, that is the end of the investigation. Or we get transparency, as they like to say, which is code for things we like. We hope you like this. We're going to call it transparency. We're going to turn these files over to Congress, where all prosecutions go to die because they don't have the ability to prosecute.
Right.
Well, I mean, she did announce it within the last week that she was going to prosecute Harvard for anti-Semitism, for failing to tamp down on anti-Semitism. And when you make that a cornerstone of the things that you are doing, because she's gone really hard on prosecuting anti-Semitism at colleges, it radicalizes people because you think, why this group? Why protect this group when Republicans went so hard against Black Lives Matter, but they think it exists for only one? How can we feel any other way when we see that we've been dragged into a war for Israel and we are following their lead on anti-Semitism, which again, the ADL defines as even hearing problematic comments about Israel? They have the crime stats. They know. How can we not bang our heads against the wall when we see that this is what she was actually up to instead of the things that we wanted?
Well, this was the generational opportunity that was lost. I mean, the Department of Justice is the ring of power. No individual can wield it. The lesson that we learned from Tolkien is you got to throw it into the volcano. Nobody can actually resist the temptations attached to it. And look, I'm a member of the tribe, and even I kind of scratched my head about this conflation of commenting on the goings-on in a geopolitical state, a secular country versus an actual religion. I don't know how, if you criticize what the Knesset does, it somehow makes you hate a religion. That, to me, is sort of a head-scratcher. But beyond that, we do have a First Amendment in this country. We do have civil liberties, and that allows you to have free association. You're allowed to be a jerk. You're allowed to be a racist. You're allowed to be a hate monger. You're allowed to say these things as long as it doesn't break my bones or pick my pocket. What difference is it to me? Because I am an American who believes in the actual social compact, where we give up a little bit of our liberties in return for a very finite amount of responsibilities from our federal government, one of which is protection against fraud and force. And I'm sorry, former Attorney General Bondi, hate speech does not constitute fraud or force. And yet she got wrapped around the axle on that, mostly because it afforded her the opportunity to go do some sort of a tryout at Fox News for contributorship.
Oh, that's exactly, I mean,
well,
yes. I mean, I used to work there. I know it's exactly what's about to happen. I hand to the heavens, I guarantee you, well, you heard it from Steve Friend, but I think you're right, that pretty darn soon she's going to be on one of those shows on a regular basis.
Well, she says in her farewell tweet that I am moving into the private sector, where she will continue fighting for the Trump administration. So,
AKA Fox News. Before we let you go, Steve, our reporting earlier, we mentioned about Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, being courted by the White House to abandon his Senate bid against John Cornyn, maybe to take over and be the new Attorney General of the United States. Todd Blanche is the interim AG. What do you think about that move?
Well, I mean, what does it say about the United States Senate that they're willing to trade Ken Paxton away in order to get John Cornyn back there for 6 years? I know Ken Paxton's done some things pretty aggressively in Texas. I don't know where his integrity was on them, where his heart was on it, or it was just sort of like going to be doing some showing off moves in order to run for Senate. But look, I'm a results guy. If those sorts of things and actions he took were objectively good for that state, I wouldn't necessarily mind it. We have some other really, really competent attorneys general within the country. At a state level. I know where I'm at in Florida, we have a really good attorney general. I've also heard the Lee Zeldin's name being bandied about, the administrator over at the EPA. It's going to remain to be seen, but I think the in earnest move that has to happen is we can't have Todd Blanche atop the Department of Justice for very long. He's definitely not an objective force for good.
Yeah,
I guess just look who receives the most APEC money, and that'll probably be the
next. Ken Paxton goes very hard on anti-Semitism in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely going after. So if you get a lot of APEC money, chances are you'll likely be the next Attorney General of the United States. That's what, I guess, prevented Matt Gaetz from getting it. Steve Friend, great to see you. Can you tell people where to find your podcast? And I saw a lot of people in the chat saying it's a big day for the suspendables out there. Tell us where people can find your new podcast.
Oh, thank you very much. So it's the American Radicals Podcast, AMRAD Pod for short. It's available on Rumble. It's on YouTube. You can also get us over at Spotify at AMRAD Pod for the American Radicals Podcast every weekday at noon.
Awesome. Steve Friend, great to see you. Thank you so much for your thoughts on this.
Thanks, guys. Happy Easter.
Thanks. Happy Easter to you. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk to Dr. Robert Malone. You may know him. He was one of the most canceled medical professionals during the pandemic. He became famous for it. He's, I want to say, a MAHA leader.
Yeah.
Right? We would say he's a MAHA leader. He's just left the Trump administration. So we want to know what's going on over there with
the whole MAHA thing.
What's that? Yeah. Where's that status? Yeah. So we're going to do that in just a second.
That's right. We are. And someone in the chat room was saying, hey, but no, but the Dow is over 50,000, contradicting what Steve and I were just talking about. No, it's not. Just FYI, just in case you're wondering. So maybe Pam would still have her job if that was the case. All right. We're going to get to Dr. Robert Malone in a second. But first, we have to tell you what's going on with gold prices, what's happening right now in the broader marketplace. And because with oil prices spiking, the U.S. dollar continuing to implode, where is smart money moving right now? Easy for me to say. It's moving towards precious metals. It's moving towards real, tangible assets. I mean, that's why these central banks have been hoarding and buying, getting as much gold and silver as they possibly can, because they know what's coming. And our friends at Lear Capital can help you do the very same thing, to have it shipped right to your house. You can store it in your gun safe, gold coins, silver coins, taking some of those U.S. dollars, which are being devalued, inflation going back up again, your buying power is declining, and a way to protect your family. The way that I look at gold and silver is not, yeah, it's great that it's gone up, you know, thousands of dollars. That's great. But for me, I look at it as a wealth preservation tool for your family, something to protect your kids, your loved ones. Think of it like a vault. That's the kind of how I look at it. It's almost like prepping in a way. And they can help you do that. In fact, just give them a call and they'll ship this right to your house, this precious metals investing kit. It's free. You can sit down with your loved ones and discuss it. No obligation at all. They're an American company, so you can have a phone call with them. They're not going to be outsourced to some call center in India. They will talk to you and just walk you through the process. And, you know, if it's not for you, it's not for you. again, but just have that conversation. Education is the key of this company. They really believe in education, financial education, because it's not something we learn in high school. Barely even learn how to balance a checkbook in high school. So give them a call today, 1-800-613-3557, or just go to LearRedacted.com, and you can receive up to $20,000 in free bonus medals with a qualified purchase. Again, LearRedacted.com, or call them, 1-800-613-3557.
Well, Dr. Robert Malone resigned as vice chair of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices with the Trump administration. Now, if you don't know who Dr. Malone is, let me tell you, he is someone the MAHA community really trusted because he was an early mRNA vaccine researcher who warned about the COVID vaccine. He was deplatformed. He was censored. He later sued the Biden administration. We've covered that case for censorship. So when he joined the Trump administration, the Make America Healthy Again community, people like me who may have supported the Trump administration, who may not have otherwise, but this was an important tenet of our vote, took this as a good sign that the government was listening to evidence-based doctors and experts. Now, though, Dr. Malone has left the government, so maybe he can give us some insight on why the MAHA movement seems, I don't know, stalled or deflated. Dr. Malone joins us today. He's the author of the book Psy War, Exploring the New World Order. So, Dr. Malone, thank you so much for joining us. I want to ask you, how much progress do you think the MAHA movement has made inside the Trump administration? If you were to give it a grade on what our expectations were in early 25 when Trump took office.
I guess the grade would have to be a C. Yeah, it's not failing, and it's succeeding in many things, particularly relating to nutrition. The nutrition agenda and food safety, food integrity, improving the various SNAP benefits programs, children's food in schools, etc., food for military personnel. For instance, it had a major setback on the glyphosate policies. And of course, the thing that has a lot of people upset about is the willingness of the Trump administration to shut down any discussions about vaccine policy in advance of the midterms, consequent to some polling and some key figures in the West Wing that apparently find this discussion to be uncomfortable.
So would you say the those voices inside of the White House, I don't know if you're able to name names or not, but I will, and you can just shake your head yes or no, or blink twice if you're okay with that, Susie Wiles, and these individuals who are actively trying to torpedo, we've covered this on our show, so this is not flying off the handle here, but Susie Wiles specifically trying to torpedo the MAHA movement inside the White House. And should independents feel hurt by this, that they voted for Trump?
I haven't heard specifically that Susie is the problem. And I was in pretty close communication with Bobby and his top leadership. Overton is a problem. Overton is Marty McCarry's former postdoc. She's a Hopkins MD, MPH. And the way I hear the storyline is that she is a major factor in influencing policy relating to this decision to shut down the secretary from discussing anything about vaccines and shut down any moves or discussions that will cause the populace to become alerted to more vaccine controversy. Apparently, the decision to make major change in the vaccine policy by realigning it with Western nations, kind of our peer nations, and cutting way back on the mandated vaccines, didn't play so well with the general electorate, according to the polling. But those polls are disputed. There's been a number of others that have come out since then. that suggest that's not the case. But the general position has been that the MAHA voter only represents something to the in the range of 2 to 5% of the overall electorate that would potentially vote in favor in the midterm for the Republican Party candidates, particularly in the House, and that those people are expendable in the face of the risks of blowback from further vaccine controversy among the other slice of the Trump electorate.
Well, I blame very much, I indict the media on that, because the headlines around the new vaccine guidelines, which still very much allow you to take vaccines that are not on the mandated list, you still can get them.
They're still fully subsubsidized, just like they were before.
And the media treats it as if...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's been stunning watching the media hysteria around this. And thank you for posting my Cywar book, which foreshadows all of this and kind of gives you a window into the mechanics of how things work these days. And of course, it's even worse now with the advent of artificial intelligence. It's like everything is on hyperdrive. But the position that was taken, and it was very carefully nuanced by lawyers, et cetera, was that nobody's vaccines were taken away. Nobody's access to vaccines were taken away. None of the subsidies were taken away. None of the indemnification programs were taken away. Matter of fact, that was a hot button with the White House, was that the ACIP was going to probably vote in favor of withdrawal of the PREP Act support for the mRNA products. But what was done was to place many of those vaccines in a category called shared decision making. And what was so radical about shared decision making was that it takes the position that you should have active informed consent with your pediatrician or your physician about whether or not to accept a vaccine product. And somehow that's radical.
Yeah. I mean, the headlines are that RFK Jr. is taking away these vaccines when that wasn't. And so the media is actively trying to discourage you from researching each one for yourself and making your own decision because it's no longer forced.
Or even just having a conversation with your physician and expecting your physician to be informed. The one of the cores of the American Academy of Pediatrics lawsuit against Bobby that was what has shut down all of this now because of this Fifth Circuit Court judge in Boston is that it's going to cost pediatricians too much time and money to engage in informed consent with their patients. They object to this.
Okay.
The real thing behind that is they think that, you know, they're on these schedules where they have to see a new kid every 15 minutes or less. That's the demand that's being placed on them because they've all gone corporate. And furthermore, most of them don't really understand vaccine science. It's quite complicated and they don't understand the nuances of risk benefit. And they just default back to, you know, some version of it's safe and effective. Take it. It's your time.
When you look at the COVID vaccine, Dr. Malone, I'm curious about this. Obviously, you're there in the White House. You're there in the Trump administration under a leader who, of course, championed Operation Warp Speed, right? Pushed for the acceleration of getting this horrible.
And he's still dug in on these products being one of his great achievements. That is
a fact. That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around it. I mean, it is
a fact. And it's a reality here. And will the secretary be allowed to pursue the truth? Will people within the FDA that know what actually happened be allowed to pursue the truth? Well, a senior FDA leader was down on my farm just a couple of days ago sharing stories about what was observed by this person this person joined the Trump administration in Trump 1 about halfway through, was in the agency all the way through the Biden years, remains in the agency now, and has detailed understanding of what transpired. The stories are amazing. I'll just say it's going to make a great book one day, I hope. But beyond that, the moral transgressions, the corruption, the distortion of data, the falsification of data, The suppression of key findings, such as the pediatric deaths that are not being allowed to be released to the public.
Who's blocking that? So children deaths because of COVID-19 shots, that's being suppressed?
The answer, the name is Marty.
Marty Makary.
Yeah.
So you've named a few names now. Heidi Overton, Marty Makary.
Really? Who testified to Congress about, against, you know, mandates, vaccine mandates.
Yeah, so I really, there's a lot of dynamics that are going on. There is a huge amount of rumor mill going on about the reorg. As you know, there was just a major reorg at HHS with a promotion of some key leaders from within the CMS group that's been so effective under Dr. Oz's leadership to positions where they're functionally chief operating officer for HHS. There's just been a major amount of change within the overall sixth floor operation. And of course, now we have a case where the nominated Surgeon General is not going to clear Senate approval. And so that's another issue.
I just want to put up, so just to be clear, Heidi Overton here, one of the big blockers of the MAHA movement. You mentioned Marty Makary, and you mentioned these pediatric childhood deaths from COVID shots, COVID-19 adverse effects. Have you seen that data? Can you tell us? You've seen the data. Can you tell us how many children, childhood deaths in the United States that they're blocking and hiding?
We don't know that number. What we do know is that there was a number of deaths reported in VAERS that were identified by Tracy Bethoag when she first came in as the FDA CDC ACIP liaison person. She's now the acting director of the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, CDER. So Tracy Bethoag went through, found a number of cases, drilled in on those cases, and found a half dozen that were incontrovertible. Those passed through re-review, I think twice at FDA. There was, Vinay, you'll recall, disclosed that this existed. But then suddenly there was silence about all of this because it was a decision not to disclose, because those cases are extremely troubling in terms of how they were handled within the CDC. Frankly, there has been significant cover-up all the way through the COVID crisis of a series of issues, not the least of which is the DNA adulteration. But that is what the record shows. And the leadership right now is not willing to allow that information to become public.
Wow. I mean, my jaw is dropping here. I mean, you mentioned, I want to go back to this, Heidi Overton. What exactly, specifically, is she doing to block this at the White House? Is she or Marty Makary specifically responsible from hiding this data?
My understanding is that she's the one that is advocating the policy. She's one of the America First appointees.
Right.
So she specifically is the one that has been spearheading the interpretation of this internal poll that suggested that there is significant risk for raising issues about vaccine, controversial issues around vaccines during the midterm, particularly for House members.
Wow.
And advocated that there be a complete cessation of any further discussion about vaccine policy and associated controversies, like, for instance, taking a position to withdraw coverage from the PrEP Act, because we no longer have an emergency. Clearly, that's been over for a couple of years now. But withdrawing PrEP Act coverage, liability coverage for these mRNA products, that is absolutely something that the secretary could do at a moment's notice with the stroke of a pen.
Yeah, two sentences, and he could remove the PrEP Act.
My understanding is the secretary supports that. I can't speak for him, but that's my understanding. but that is not a policy that will be allowed to proceed at this point.
I'm so confused. We played what? Videos here of Dr. Marty's, I thought it was Macri, but whatever, of his testimony to Congress against vaccine mandates and criticizing the vaccine, the COVID vaccine rollouts, talking about infection-acquired immunity. Why would he do that if he's incurious of the effects, the harmful effects of something he, you know, so my mind goes
mandates,
to.
Mandates, so there's a lot of nuance going on within this domain of what happened.
Yeah.
And what the transgressions were. And so for instance, one of the topics that's allowed to be discussed is the lab leak theory. Mm-hmm. And so you've seen an explosion of information about the lab leak theory and various decisions and policy positions taken regarding that. The policies about mandating products that occurred during the Biden administration, and by the way, the censorship policies. You know, I was just one of many, and I wasn't part of that lawsuit, by the way. My colleagues were. But in any case, those things are allowed to be criticized now.
Right.
What transpired within the government, having to do with data, information, disclosure about adverse events, that is concerning the mRNA products. That's still a third rail. That's not really allowed to be discussed publicly. It's not even really discussed much internally. We discussed it at length within the ACIP COVID working group. And by having resigned, and by the way, I haven't left the government. I'm just switching over to working with the State Department and Undersecretary DiNonno on issues relating to the Biowarfare Convention. And in particular, I'm very intrigued by advancing the use of artificial intelligence to support compliance and detection of transgressions relating to the Biowarfare Convention, which is something that the president supports. So I'm not out, but in terms of the issues you're talking about and the I'm trying to be a little diplomatic here. The failure to aggressively advance MAHA agendas beyond these very easy and politically acceptable things like nutrition.
Right.
So you can make the case that the easy things, the low-hanging fruit, are being picked. And things that aren't very controversial and do play well with the public. Mm-hmm. Are being advanced, but the harder things, which the secretary has been pursuing, frankly, for decades, vaccine transparency. He's not anti-vaccine. He's anti-propaganda. He's anti this vaccine religion. Vaccines, which is where, as a now 40-year, I guess, vaccine developer, a lot of the, you know, CHD kind of crowd hate me because I have a history of being a vaccine developer. And there are those who think I should be tried and hung because of what I did when I was 28 in establishing the foundations for the mRNA technology. But I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm anti-propaganda. I'm anti-mandate. I'm against this. What Aaron Seary calls the religion of vaccines, this religious mantra that all of these products are safe and effective, and it's acceptable to mandate them on the American public. It's not acceptable, and it's not necessary. What it does is well demonstrated. It absolutely drives distrust on the part of the American people. And you can compare that with the policies in Northern Europe, in particularly the Scandinavian states, where they don't have mandates and they have very high vaccine uptake for those vaccines that make sense.
Right.
But we have this bizarre, perverse incentive structure that's been created with the Vaccines for Children program and the indemnification, in which you have an industry that has run rampant, and it has to stop. And I absolutely support the secretary's position on that. But at this point, the secretary has been told to put a cork in it.
I want to ask you just one last question, because, again, the propaganda you're up against is happily disseminated by the mainstream media. They love it every time they can take a hit at Bobby Kennedy.
It's their bread and butter financially.
Yes. And so now they're hot and bothered about the measles, that not mandated measles vaccines. You write about this a lot on your newsletter, which I want to.
The secretary has repeatedly said measles vaccines are effective. And early on, they came out with this, two children died in West Texas, okay? But both of those cases, if you review the case files, are clearly documented to be medical, frankly, malpractice, misdiagnosis and failure to treat with appropriate antibiotics, secondary infections. They're not measles deaths. Right. But the media, this is a convenient trope. And we're now in an age in which infectious disease sells. This has become the new, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, if it has anything to do with infectious disease, by God, it's right in the forefront, because it sells, clicks, likes, follows, and all the controversy around it gets amazing attention. I mean, come on. I resign from this dysfunctional committee that has been shut down by a activist judge in Boston, and it becomes international news, and there must be 30 or 40 articles out about it. It's not that big a deal, guys. And so it just illustrates that this is something that sells media, and it's become part of the ecosystem. And we've weaponized, we've politicized public health policy instead of examining it rationally and helping the public to make informed decisions, which is the position we should be in, instead of making it yet another partisan battle line.
With 1 minute left, people in the chat room are saying, you got to ask him about chemtrails and the administration. I know Bobby Kennedy was pushing big on this.
I'm an expert on chemtrails. I've been writing about chemtrails ever since I was 8 years old.
So why is there not a greater push from this administration to end this chemical spraying in our skies? It's enough already.
Okay, so from my idiosyncratic outsider perspective, this goes way back to the 60s. Lyndon Johnson was an advocate of weather change. We have deep investment from the intelligence community in the technology for manipulating weather. Manipulation of weather is perceived as having great benefit in all kinds of parameters, both domestically and internationally. And we still are dealing with the residue of the whole climate change propaganda. So this administration clearly doesn't see this as a priority, as opposed to Ron DeSantis, to his credit. Mm-hmm. All I can speculate is that the influencers that have the ear of the president right now do not see this as a priority. And if people want it to be a priority, like with everything in this MAHA movement, they've got to get out there and make it quite clear that they care about this. And I don't see enough momentum. We can't even get enough momentum to push back against the administration's bottling up the secretary over vaccine policy. If MAHA or others want to make a dent in the use of these chemicals to manipulate weather, they've got to make it, really, really clear that this is an issue that a significant fraction of the electorate will vote for. And you can make that case. This material is raining down on our land. It's raining down in our air. It's another form of pollution. There's a lot of ways that this could be pursued politically. but it doesn't seem to have a advocacy electorate advocacy group that is sufficiently powerful and focused to make this a compelling argument within this administration, in my opinion.
Well, I want to suggest that everybody subscribe to your Substack because I learn a lot there. It's Malone.news. Please do subscribe because a lot of times you do take this hysteria and you give us the medical data, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. I really appreciate it. The only thing I can say about this MAHA movement is that a lot of it overlaps with the anti-war movement, and we're pretty tired. We're busy screaming about things, you know, at this point, but you're right. We have to, you know, be the leaders.
Well, you're going to have to pick your battles, my friends.
I don't know how to do that.
You're getting too fragmented.
Yeah.
That's what's happened, and a case can be made that a lot of that fragmentation is intentional.
Yes.
And it's being driven by these kinds of technologies. And frankly, from what I know at the cutting edge of artificial intelligence, it's going to get far, far worse.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Doctor, we need to work on your bedside manner.
Sorry.
Yeah. Then later we'll talk about the medical effects of all the stress from all of it on me. So on all of us collectively.
You know, go get yourself a homestead like I did and enjoy life and smell the flowers and watch the fruit trees bloom.
Okay. Thank you,
Dr. Robert Malone. Great to see you as always. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Doc. All right. What do you guys think of that? I mean, I'm shocked. I'm shocked on a couple of levels. Go ahead, Philip.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, now I'm depressed because he said the solution is to go smell the flowers and my allergies are already bad enough. So great. So there is no solution for me.
There's no solution for you. But I mean, the fact that inside the White House, you have people like Dr. Makary, you have Heidi Overton, who are literally going out of their way to torpedo the MAHA movement because it doesn't poll well, that by talking about vaccines or adverse events from vaccines, that that would actually incapacitate Republicans in the midterm elections. Like, so this small little percentage of independents who might be swayed, it's a polling issue for these people.
Yeah.
It's not a health issue. It's a polling issue for these people. And that's what's really troubling.
I just feel like this administration, like, I feel like they should have just left serious people out of it entirely. Because, I mean, you know, you've got like people that actually wanted to make a difference and they get railroaded by, you know, all the other like kind of sycophantic Epstein class. And it just, it's frustrating to have people that actually want to do something along the lines of what they said. And it's just like, I think we'd have just been better off to not even involve them and just have it be a clown show.
It's given us false hope, right? But Dr. Malone,
look what happens when you have people that do stand up. You have like a Thomas Massie, and then they got like, what, $35 million put against him? In a small state like Kentucky, like, it's like, no matter what, if you have somebody that rises to the top as somebody that's actually going to do what the people want, they do everything they can to destroy that person.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But I didn't realize Dr. Malone is still working inside the government. He still has, you know, he's a serious person and he still has a role. So let's use that as a silver lining, shall we? That's going to do it for us today, you guys. Hey, I want to remind you to please subscribe to the Redacted newsletter. You can find it at redacted.inc. Once you go there, you put in your email address. It is totally free. It comes out every day that this show comes out, Monday through Thursday. Nothing is upsold or cross-sold. It's free for everybody, and free means free. Sometimes we link you to something behind a paywall, but we really try not to if we can avoid it, and we try really hard to link you to original source material. So please do stay subscribed, redacted.inc. We really appreciate your patronage of our newsletter and our show.
That's right. Thank you guys so much. We'll have great content and some interviews, great interviews for you this weekend. We're really excited about those. So please subscribe here to the channel on YouTube, on Rumble, on X, and we will see you back here real soon. Have a great night, everybody.